Australia.
Hello, this is Richard Hewitt from Pacific Beat, and for the next 30 minutes, with the help of Ola Bjokvall from the Football and Oceania website, we're going to focus on some of the key issues for the sport in the region during 2017 and where it might be heading into 2018 and beyond. And we start with the Pacific football story of the year, because when the rank outsiders Vanuatu found the net against Mexico at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup, even the Mexicans got excited. It didn't matter that Vanuatu lost the game in the dying seconds by 3-2, because by then they had set Pacific soccer alight and alerted the rest of the world to an untapped talent pool. And another equally remarkable effort in the 3-2 loss to Germany proved that the Vanuatu team were no flash in the pan.
This tiny nation with huge hearts, Germany, a country nearly 30 times the size, nearly 300 times the population. But the minnows from Vanuatu strike back here with Boncalo with a sumptuous free kick.
Ola, nobody expected this from one of the smallest teams ever to play on the world stage. It was a remarkable achievement, wasn't it?
It truly was. After getting over the shock of actually playing in the World Cup, I think they were even with Mexico throughout the entire game. The same with Germany. They managed to pull two back after being 3-0 down and barely lost. And then when they played Venezuela, who ended up runners-up in that tournament, they still showed fighting spirit.
Significantly, it sends a signal to the rest of the Pacific, doesn't it? That if they can get themselves a decent coach, there's no shortage of talent.
Well, yeah, it does, definitely. It's Dejan Glusevic, who came in and did a wonderful, wonderful job. If you get a coach who knows what he's doing, who's used to working with youngsters, you can get pretty much anywhere. That tournament just shows that. They were never really out of their depth against Venezuela. I think they were feeling the tiredness from the first game more than actually being outclassed.
And what it's also done, of course, is open the doors for players from the Pacific to have a crack at playing in Europe, because the Vanuatu captain, Boncalo, has been playing in Switzerland, albeit at third tier, but it's a start. And Alban Comalong from Papua New Guinea is also playing at a similar level in Germany. And they're really pioneers for the Pacific, it seems to me, and maybe telling Europe that there is talent here that's worth having a look at.
They definitely are. Boncalo, before he moved to Ascona in Switzerland, he was on trial at La Liga side Leganés. And there's talks of him going to a professional club in January. There's nothing been confirmed yet, but there's much rumours about it. And Ronaldo Wilkins, the other star of that Under-20 World Cup, just had a trial with Brazilian giant Sao Paulo for 2 weeks now, just gone in November.
Do you think that finally, perhaps, the Pacific players are going to get noticed? Because it has always seemed to me that for any club at a professional level to take a Pacific player is minimum risk, because if they uncover a diamond, then great for everybody concerned. If that player gets some experience and comes back to the Pacific, nobody's lost anything, and it certainly isn't going to cost anybody very much, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Pacific or Oceania in general. It's like the last undiscovered place in the footballing world. It used to be Africa, where you'd go to get cheap, very talented players. And I think it's just a matter of time before the big leagues and the big teams start turning to Oceania to do the same thing.
You mentioned Dejan Glusevic, the coach there, Ola. So let's get his verdict on Vanuatu's achievements.
Goal, mission, objective are achieved. We were the smallest nation ever play FIFA finals, but perhaps we are the only team who managed to play all registered players. Also, we scored more goals from Germany and Mexico, winning the world's respect and media attention. I would say that success was 100%, taking consideration that we had a really short time to prepare boys for this highest possible competition.
Where do they go next? How do they build on this remarkable achievement on the world stage?
Now it's time to provide them and expose them to more international competition. I'm not talking only about facility. I'm not talking about material things only. I'm talking about creating environment where they can develop themselves further. I believe more than five players have very good opportunity to continue their professional career overseas.
So, Ola, if Vanuatu's World Cup adventure was the good news story for the Pacific, would you agree that the downside for football in Oceania, I would suggest, is what has happened in Papua New Guinea? You had the national team there threatening perhaps to defeat New Zealand and make it to the World Cup, having held them to a draw in the OFC Nations Cup a year earlier. But of course, it all fell apart for them when they lost half their players who were playing for clubs who were no longer eligible for national representation when a breakaway league was set up. What do you make of that? Why do you think FIFA have so far not intervened in Papua New Guinea? Because it's difficult to see them not intervening if it was just about anywhere else in the world.
It surprised me that FIFA hasn't done anything. I don't think there's barely been any acknowledgement at all from FIFA that there's actually something going on. I think FIFA, they're hoping that because it's Oceania, no one's going to take notice and they can just move along. There's nothing to see here, that kind of attitude. But yeah, the situation is a mess and no one wants to talk to the other party involved. And I don't really see a solution anytime soon. And the ones this is really hurting are the players, because they just want to play football, I assume, and represent their country. And the players of like Hikari United, they can't do that right now, as they're suspended.
My understanding is that the official National Soccer League, such as it is due to kick off in the early part of 2018. And I don't believe there will be many more than six clubs, possibly eight, in that competition. So it's teetering on the brink of being unworkable as a competition, isn't it?
It is. In the summer just gone, I think they had six teams in it. They didn't stage their own final because of various economic problems, such as sponsors dropping out and clubs not paying the licenses. So I think PNG Football Association are struggling more than they want to let on.
To what degree do you think that they are, shall we say, getting away with it because their president, David Chung, is very high up now on the FIFA ladder, never mind in Papua New Guinea and Oceania. Maybe the story he's telling them at the top table is not the reality of what's happening back in PNG.
I don't want to stick my neck out too much, but why a man can be president of the PNG Football Association and OFC at the same time, there's a conflict of interest there. Because surely, had he not been president of the OFC, the OFC themselves would have intervened here a long time ago.
Well, John Caponata, the driving force behind the breakaway league and owner of Hikari United, would certainly share that view, but he's tried and failed to persuade FIFA to investigate.
I have already sent all the complaints and everything to FIFA Ethics Committee, but nothing has come back in listening to what our queries are and what our disappointments are. And also, one very important thing is that under the statutes, each member that is suspended, everybody must attend the Congress to voice their grounds of defense. Now, that has not been exercised democratically in the Congress. So to me, I feel that the Congress was manipulated and set up for maybe Mr. Chung's own way to go.
So you've made contact with FIFA, you've obviously raised your objections with them, but no response up until now. So where can you go next?
This is a very hard question to answer. But I can't go to Papua New Guinea football because they don't have a neutral body or a committee to hear our grievances. There's nothing set up in this country. And also the General Secretary, possibly, let me say, has compromised his office. I can't go to OFC because Kai Nicholas, the General Secretary, is also protecting the office. And they can't come and listen to us. And then we go to FIFA. They're not listening to us. They're not coming to us. So the 12 members, the majority of the presidents and the associates in this country, has endorsed Football Federation, PNG, and the National Premier League. And our numbers are increasing all over the country.
That's one view, but PNG's national coach Fleming Seretslev has a very different perspective.
It'll not go to waste, but you need to have the conditions to do it. Not only the conditions for the national team, but also the conditions for football in general. And here I'm thinking about the championship. You cannot have a championship with only 15 games a year. You must try to establish, I would call it, a normal league where you are playing the whole year through on highest level, and not only for maybe 3 months on high level, and then you have 9 months where you're playing on a much lower level.
I know you've been somewhat scathing about the breakaway league, but in essence, aren't they trying to do what you would want to see? Grow a bigger competition that reaches out right across the country?
No, not at all. Unfortunately, they have done absolutely nothing good for football in this country. You build a league with more clubs, but what about the quality of those clubs? Most of them were village teams who actually played. It was the same as to be playing in a local league. So for me, it made absolutely no sense what they have been doing.
So, Ola, in light of what Fleming Seretslev has to say, do you fear for the future of football in the biggest of the Pacific nations?
In a sense, yes, I do, because with Hikari United and the newly started National Premier League, as it's called, seeming to actually be the more popular league. And with it not being recognized by anyone, then yeah, I kind of do, because those players are the ones who need to play for the national team and in the OFC Champions League. And if this situation continues for, say, another 5 years, then I don't see Papua New Guinea going anywhere, really. And they had such promise.
Well, this is the irony, isn't it? Because they did show such a great promise. And Fleming Saretslev, he's there for now. But whether he'll be there in the next few months, I guess that's a question only he can answer. But in contrast, you have another European coach in Christophe Garmel looking after Fiji, and they are literally on a mission now, aren't they? Mission 2026 is what they're aiming for. They want to be the second Pacific team, if we assume New Zealand is the first, to make it to the expanded World Cup in 2026. And I'm sure Fleming Saretslev would love to be in that situation. But let's look at what Christophe Garmel is doing. I mean, is it a realistic ambition for him, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is, because Fiji is one of those where there's a lot of people playing football, there's a lot of potential. Christophe Garmel is a very determined man. I've spoken to him quite a few times now, and he's a man who likes to do things his way and who just wants the best for football in Fiji. And among one of the many things that he would like to do is professionalize the Premier League there, preferably within as fast as 3 years. Whether that's doable or not is another debate. But he said he wanted to start off with six clubs selected for professionalization, if you will. So far, I haven't heard which of those six clubs that's going to be, but it's very interesting what Christophe is trying to do, changing the entire way football's being viewed in Fiji.
A couple of other aspects, Ola, of Christophe Garmel's work so far.
The best is that they become professional. Otherwise, we will never learn the way to grow up. And it's very, very important. With Mr. Youssoufla, we are working on that with our CEO. And I have met also in the Philippines, they have done this process to professionalize the league. Let's see within the 3 years how we can fix it also.
I presume the biggest problem will be money.
Yeah, you presume well. It's really a big problem. But, you know, there is money, there is a big sponsor. If the league become attracted by the kind of play, if we change the kind of play, people, they enjoy, and we make it becoming a show as it is everywhere else in the world, I think some people, they are ready to invest in this kind of process. So I think it's possible, really.
And you've started already an under-16 youth league. Those players, I presume, are the players that you would hope would step in to a professional league and ultimately, if all goes well, into the World Cup in 2026.
Yeah, exactly. We have anticipated already on this by developing the under-16. I am also working about the under-14, because it will be the age that will represent the nation for 2026 and also before for 2024 for the qualification. So we have to anticipate, work on them directly. It's an important process. For the moment, the league is not long enough for what I am thinking. The duration of the championship is 3 or 4 months, it's not enough. I'm thinking how to make the process longer. Like that, we will have consistency by year, and in 3 years, they could integrate the professional league, and then we continue the process by having regular training for everyone. It could give Fiji soccer a better possibility to join the World Cup in 2026.
Another aspect of the plan, I gather, is that you'd like to see a hotel built in Bar where you would establish your national headquarters. The reason for that would be to attract visiting teams to come to Fiji to play.
Yes, I have proposed to the board a new plan of building, because it's important to open Fiji to the world. It's a fantastic place, and I am sure that if we reach a certain standard, we can attract teams overseas that could come and make a good preparation by having a good field, by having a hotel with everything inside for each. It's important. Football is not only now managing a team, it's also to think how we can develop the team, the Fijian soccer, but also how we can open it for outside, overseas. And we have everything here, to be honest. So let's build for the future. And I'm sure that some teams, they will come to prepare themselves. And if they come here, they give visibility also to Fiji. We can also share a program with the coaches, and we can see how they work. And it update our own coaches. It's like a domino effect. You make a thing and has effect on others. It's my vision. This vision, I think, could help the Fijians.
Ola Bjokoval from the Football in Oceania website is with me. And Ola, as part of Christophe Garmel's vision, It looks highly likely that a number of Fijian players now might be in line for professional contracts in Indonesia. Now, Indonesia, of course, is not exactly at the top of the FIFA world rankings, but the mere fact that they have professional contracts, so would be a huge step for those players.
Oh, yeah, because once you get into a professional environment every day, even if it doesn't work out and you go back to Fiji, you can take that with you and you can teach the ones coming through. And if it does work out, then great, because Indonesia, as you say, it's not the biggest league in the world, but it's still a better league than the Fijian one.
And the other aspect of what Christophe Gomel has achieved is getting international games for his side outside the OFC competitions, which has pretty much never happened before in this region. And other teams are getting involved now, as we saw when Estonia came to the Pacific. As far as I'm aware, the first European side ever to tour this part of the world. They played Fiji, they played Vanuatu, they played New Caledonia, and all the games were close. So are Estonia the pioneers? I mean, could you, for example, see Norway sending a team to the Pacific?
I could see that happening, but Estonia seemed to have a tendency to want to play what for them might be, let's say, weird nations. Last year, they played St. Kitts and Nevis and Antigua and Barbuda. And in 2013, they played Trinidad and Tobago and Kyrgyzstan. So they seem to have this tendency of wanting to play smaller nations, well, as a way of building up relations and getting to see the world.
Well, let's hear what Christophe Gomel and his opposite number, Martin Rehm, made of Fiji's encounter with Estonia in Suva.
We play against a team that ranked 80 FIFA, so it's really not easy at all. I think the play was good, but the defensive mistakes were evitable. We could avoid it. Honestly, 1-0, I could have enjoyed it, if I can say that. But 2-0, the second goal, we are really unlucky on that. The youth, honestly, they respond well. Huh? They want to prove that they can be part of the team. That's why I bring youth, because they have potential. But before, nobody give them a chance. I have to do that because our aim goal, don't forget, is to give consistency for the national team until 2026.
We always knew Estonia would bring a different type of game, the type of standard they play in Europe. So how has this exposure helped and assisted your team?
They have really put at the beginning a high pressure and big rhythm. We have answered well to that. Because no matter the pressure they put on us, we have tried to develop the play and to build from the back. So on this, I'm really, really happy because I told my team what I expect from them. They have followed the plan. After, the result is what it is. Of course, if it was 9 months ago, we would have lost 10-0, 15-0. But we have showed that also for our discipline and organization, we can do it.
We've seen with Rugby Union and now Rugby League for the Fiji teams how important it is for players to be exposed to playing overseas to develop their game better. Roy Krishna is a good example of this, but there's only one Roy Krishna. You don't yet have the luxury of having more Fijian players overseas to choose from.
That's why I want this kind of game. Because to be honest, we have to expose more the Fijian player. I am sure that one day, maybe there will be 5 or 6 Roy Krishna in this team. I have received a call from an agent in Asia for 5 player Fijian will go in a trial in Asia. So maybe on 5, maybe 1 or 2 can reach a professional team.
And you had a successful outing in Indonesia in September, yeah. And there was talk that a number of Fijian players could be in line for professional contracts, yeah, over there. What's the progress on this?
Progress on this is that 3 Fijian players should go in December after the Mini Pacific Game for a trial in Indonesia. I will take my time to go with them and to help them to firm a contract by giving some tips, etc.
And what's next on the program for the Bulla Boys?
For the Bulla Boys, we want to host India in Suva in March, in March 2018, or Lotoka. We have to also, one time here, one time there, it's important. National team of Fiji belongs to everyone.
I think they played quite well organized in defense, and it was not easy to create goal chances. That way, I think Fiji was surprisingly good. I was quite worried before the game because the long traveling and only a few days to recover for travel to the game, and for players, it was quite tough to play this game.
What persuaded your team to come to the Pacific when other teams from outside this region hardly do that?
For our team, maybe it's already like tradition, because we was last year in a similar tour in the Caribbean island. Now we're more far away from home, and it's cooperating with FIFA, yeah, to this project to unite also different regions and do these friendly games. And for us, it's also the possibility to give younger players and players who is not playing so much in national team to feel the national team atmosphere, and it was good.
When you go back home, will you be encouraging other European teams to consider coming out here too?
It's quite difficult maybe for a European team to come here, but yeah, I suggest for others also to try this. It's quite interesting.
That's the Estonian coach Martin Rehm, who seems to have enjoyed the experience of playing in Oceania. And Ola, it does seem that things are changing for the Pacific teams, and above all else, they are being noticed and being given credibility.
Yeah, it seems most of them have a genuine passion to want to become better and to expand in every way they can, and doing those smaller tours or playing nations from Southeast Asia or from Europe, if that can be arranged, it's good. And it's great that they're doing that. And I think in the past years, money's been quite a hindrance, if you will. But it seems the OFC are willing to at least try to get the Pacific teams playing more regularly.
Now, at the other end of the scale, we have two teams in Tuvalu and Kiribati. At the moment, they are associate members of OFC, the Oceania Football Confederation. And as long as they stay as associate members, they can't compete in World Cup qualifying, and their chances of achieving the dream of becoming FIFA members would seem to be, well, impossible. You, I know, have really joined the campaign of banging the drum for Tuvalu and Kiribati. I mean, how much hope do you hold out for them achieving that dream?
Personally, I think it's going to happen. I really, really want it to happen because everyone deserves to be included. But it's difficult because I spoke to Kiribati manager Jake Cooley, and he says both the FIFA and OFC are on the fence, and they want the other one to be the one to make the first move in terms of acknowledging that, yes, you can have a membership here, which doesn't really serve anyone. And one of the ridiculous claims for becoming a FIFA member is that you need the facilities. You need to have them in place before you can apply. And once you're in FIFA, they're going to help you develop those facilities. But you need to be in FIFA to actually have the money to make those facilities happen in the first place. It's kind of a catch-22, if you will. And it's a vicious circle, and I don't see it changing anytime soon, because both nations have been trying to become FIFA members for several years. Honestly, it's taken way too long. It's taken a ridiculously long amount of time. And it seems like FIFA and the OFC doesn't really care. And that's what annoys me the most, because it can't be that hard to let an associate member in to become a full member and then help them develop what they need to develop to grow football in the nation.
Presumably, the result at the Pacific Mini Games in Vanuatu that saw Tuvalu defeat New Caledonia by 2-1 must have helped, because nobody saw that result coming. I mean, arguably, that was the biggest shock of the year in the Pacific.
Oh, yeah, surely that must have at least made the OFC perk up and take some kind of notice. Granted, it wasn't the full New Caledonia squad. I think they sent their under-21 squad, but it's still a very, very, very good achievement. And previous tournaments in the Pacific Games have shown that Tuvalu can make good results against Pacific nations. They beat American Samoa in one of the previous versions of Pacific Games. So it's not on footballing terms that they're not members yet.
Yosua sends it back again. Look at the run there, two blue jerseys there. Handed shot. Oh, that's into the net. That's the first goal here for the Tuvalu side. What a surprise. A shocker for the New Caledonian side. Looks like it was Ionatana, the captain. Valoa takes a quick throw in there. Hand across and into the net. Another goal here. That's the second one. And standing at the right position at the right time was Petoa, the all-time highest goal scorer for the Tuvalu side. And that is the confirmation of a historic night for Pacific football. The most memorable night for Tuvalu football since they played their first international back in 1979.
And it would add a little bit of romance to the world game at a time when money seems to be everything, power seems to be what football's about a lot of the time rather than what happens on the field. But when you look at Tuvalu, who train on the airstrip when there are flights coming in, Kiribati, who don't have a pitch of any description other than one made out of sand, and I mean, they will take part in the alternative World Cup in 2018, the CONIFA World Cup, which is an interesting concept, and it will give them a chance to be seen on the world stage of sorts, at least.
Well, yeah, the CONIFA World Cup is going to be highly interesting because Kiribati is going to be Oceania's representative there, and they get to play other nations and places not recognized. Like, they're going to play Greenland, they could play Tibet. There's going to be a really good window of opportunity to show the world that, hey, we're here, we matter, notice us, we exist.
The president of the Kiribati Islands Football Association is Yotabar Redfern, and he's hopeful that an appearance at the CONIFA tournament will put the country on the football map and persuade both OFC and FIFA to think again.
We are indeed excited, and this preparation is underway for our boys to train for more than 1 year so that our boys will be able to play well in the tournament. We don't want to go just for the sake of playing. We also want to do well so that we can be considered to play in other tournaments in the future.
Can I take it, therefore, that you will be putting together a squad of locally based players?
Yes, that's the plan. There's a tournament of all the players throughout all the islands, and we're thinking of selecting our players from that tournament.
Now, clearly, you can bring them together, they can train together, but the difficult part might be finding warm-up matches in the build-up to the CONIFA World Cup. I mean, are you hoping to get other countries involved in this process? And, of course, you've never played a home international in Kiribati because you don't actually have a grass pitch. Is that something you can put right?
We don't have a grass pitch at the moment in the country, but hopefully we'll use the most we can get out of what is available to us. We continue to use our pitch made of our sand, you know. We'll continue to use that, and we'll try to invite a team to get a warm-up match before the tournament.
Now, you have been trying for some time to gain membership to the Oceania Football Confederation and ultimately into FIFA too, and your neighbours at Tuvalu have been trying to do likewise. Might they be suitable opposition?
That's right. Maybe one option is to invite Tuvalu, or likewise, there's also the possibility of maybe inviting Solomon Islands, because we've played tournament with the Solomon Islands squad in previous years, so maybe that's another option. Alternatively, invite Fiji, or maybe travel to Fiji to play.
Would you see that the effort that you put into this opportunity to play into the CONIFA World Cup as being an important step to persuading OFC to upgrade you? You're an associate member at the moment, along with Tuvalu, but you want full membership, and I presume you would like the chance to compete in the World Cup one day.
Well, that ultimately is the target. We do hope that playing the CONIFA World Football Cup will get more recognition and maybe persuade OFC and FIFA to admit Kiribati as a full member. I know that maybe there is politics going on, you know, in OFC and FIFA. So what we are doing is just keep trying. Right now, we're continuing to revise our application because that's what we've been advised by OFC to update our application or membership, and they will let you consider.
And Ola, I did a few calculations in terms of population and the like, and it seems to me that if Gibraltar are now members of UEFA and are able to compete within Europe and therefore within the World Cup, and they're considerably smaller than Kiribati, a little bigger than Tuvalu, which is tiny, but there doesn't seem to be much of an argument not to include those two countries anymore.
Yeah, I have no idea why this hasn't happened a long time ago. If Gibraltar and Kosovo can do it, then why not Kiribati and Tuvalu? There's no good argument for it not happening. If FIFA and OFC's argument is that Kiribati doesn't have a pitch because it's made of sand and not out of grass, which Jay Cooley suggested to me that was one of the reasons they're not getting in. Honestly, that is ridiculous. You can let them in, and then if they can't host games because they don't have a grass pitch, then fine, but at least you give them the opportunity to get that grass pitch because that grass pitch is going to cost a lot of money to make, because it's not easy to grow grass in Kiribati, as far as I'm aware.
Well, they may not be able to grow grass in Kiribati, but they can certainly grow a football team if only OFC and FIFA would give them a chance. My thanks to Ola Bjokovall from the website Football in Oceania for sharing his views on the game in the Pacific and where it might be heading in 2018. I'm Richard Hewitt. Thanks for listening.